At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
It's crazy how life works sometimes, man. It's how we first met, you know. I think was that the pod meet and greet?
It was at the pod meet and greet.
Dang, that seems like it's forever ago, man. That's how long we both been doing this.
Exactly.
you know, me and my boys, we was doing Medium Lit, man. Shout out to my brothers, man.
Shout out to Medium Lit, man.
Yeah, the people, folks want us to bring it back, and it's funny. We can get into that in a second, but you know, I know you and my boy Johnny, y'all have oversaturated, man, and just seeing y'all grow and to continue, man. But before we get into all that, man, I just want the world to know who you are, man. You've been like a big brother to me, and I've been watching you from along the way, and obviously, I think the last time I saw you, man, ironically enough, I think he's an OC.
The liquor had us in our feelings, man.
Like, yeah, but you know, we had like a real therapeutic conversation. Yeah.
You know, it's real when you pull somebody to the side and you know you get into some real shit. But no, man, shout out to you, Rashad, man. And I just been delighted to see what you've been able to do. You know, I follow your content, I share it whenever I can, you know, whatever I can do to uplift you, bro. You know, but you know, I'm Ralph. I'm one half of Oversaturated, you know, the podcast. We've been doing it going on 7 years now. You know, we had some, you know, some peaks and valleys. As anything you put into, you know, like passion projects and things like that, the growth has been there. I encourage anybody that's listening to this to, you know, check us out, give us a chance. You know, we're on all major streaming platforms. Just search Oversaturated Podcast for real.
Man, first off, 7 years is a long time, brother. I just want to put that out there. And I'm trying to think. When we started doing Medium Lit, we just got started when we first met y'all, man. Well, you know that I remember. I think when y'all was talking to us, y'all might have been a year or two in at that point.
Well, whatever it's been a while though. Yeah, it was. We may have been there in maybe 3-4 years at that point, because I think we had a recent logo change. Like, I can pinpoint certain things in the OS timeline by what, you know, we've done. So we changed our logo, and I think we had new shirts that day. So that's what makes me.
You know, no, I think that's well, first off, brother, how have you been, man? How's life? I think first off, we, you know, to get into that, man, I think you know, I'm glad that we're doing this, kind of like we said before, man. It's just, you know, I don't see you all the time. When we've talked, I feel like every conversation really has been enduring and uplifting. I mean, honestly, you got me back in the gym, man, seeing you doing all your gym content. I'm like, when I see Ralph, I'm like, it's time to go back and work out, man. But how's everything been?
Everything's been decent for the most part. You know, we know the story, but you know, we can get into that a little bit later for the listeners. But good, man, just coming out of the holiday season, I do feel blessed just to, you know, survive another holiday season. You know, me and the wife, the family, just being around loved ones, you know, those, that type of thing. So, you know, I've been good for the most part, man. What about yourself?
Hey, man, I can't complain. I think season-wise, I think this is like this, and I hate hearing when people say like, this is errors. Like, I know you've been seeing that like on social media now. Like,
this is such error. Yeah.
I despise it so much. I don't hate on the meaning. I just think that I think errors but just a word that people use, not really understanding like the true meaning of an era. And your era can change even while you're in that era because life happens. So I'm not
Absolutely.
gonna hate on all the way. I just think it's cringe. No, it's been a very big transformational time, I think, personally, man. I think really the biggest thing is I like to say is I'm trying to heal myself, not from, I think when people think of healing, they think of like you had to lose somebody or, you know, a bad breakup or whatever. No, I just really think that I really am trying to get to a space to be in the best version of myself. And then also really just to be a better black man. Honestly, I mean, I think that that's something that I think me and you kind of have in common when we have these conversations. And I think why, as I've gotten older, what's always been important to me is to be myself, and to talk about things that are important. But really having these conversations, man, like, you know,
Absolutely.
it's hard for us to, when you see people doing the same thing, I think it's natural to have a sense of like competition and like see what this person's doing, that person's doing. But I've never really felt that way with anybody who does anything creatively. I mean, I think it's a space for all of us to be successful and well. So when I see it, man, I try to big it up, man, and keep everybody going or somebody keep me going or whatever. So, you know.
Absolutely, because I can't look at my comp I can't look at people that inspire me as competition. No, you inspire me. Like, those are two different things. Like, my competition is, I guess, the people that I think that are like up there. Like, them the people I'm shooting for. But we down here grinding together. I see as your inspiration for real.
I don't think people understand, man. And you and you've been in it longer than me. Talk to me about that grind, man. Just about making content. You know, the crazy thing is, like, everybody has a pod now, and at least me and my boys should joke about that. Like, it's the most annoying thing, but it is something that a lot of people do, man. And I don't think people really recognize like what it really takes to keep it going, you know?
Absolutely. Let me go down this rabbit hole. Well, the first reason we named Oversaturated the podcast was because we felt the market was itself was oversaturated. So that was like the aha, right? The aha moment. And then me and Johnny can go from these conversations that me and you are having to anything that's entertainment based or whatever, right? So we just kind of stay into those lanes. But when you talk about doing podcasting and doing something that people feel like they can all do, we all can grab a mic and do all this. But I think it's ultimately scarier to be like, to be yourself on these mics and these platforms. And that's what people fail to realize. Give a take and stand on it. Whatever your take is, you can be completely wrong in that take, but make sure that that's how you truly feel. Don't echo the sentiments of the masses. Don't try to be. I can't be, like one of the people I kind of like look to was like, like obviously like a Charlemagne or Bomani Jones. Like, those are the type of people that I look at. They're like up here, and I'm like, hey, I would really like to be like them. But however, Ralph can't be them, like, because you can go to them for that. If I want you to listen to me, I want you to listen to me for me. So it's truly finding your voice in this whole thing. And that's hard to do, especially when you're a consumer of content yourself, at least to me, because I am a sponge, bro. Like, I find myself mimicking something. I'm like, wait a minute, that's not me. Let's chop this back up and get to how Ralph would really interpret or disseminate this information and present it.
Yeah, no, I think that's the biggest thing, man. I mean, I was honestly when we was doing ML, man, that was the biggest struggle for real. Because I mean, as much as I like to talk about events that go on, and I mean this like with no like disrespect, I think when it comes to black culture content, it is very much driven in gossip and what's going on with things that I don't even know what's really going on. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know any of these people. The music takes, I'm all for it, because I mean, music is opinion, like that's art, that's subjective. But like, somebody famous, they got cheated on, like they ain't got nothing to do with me, man. Or
Listen, because this is the thing, right? When it comes to celebrity gossip, yeah, it's a lane for all of that. And me and Johnny really try to stay clear of those things when we talk about it on the pod. But the thing is, like, I would hate for somebody to discuss my dirty laundry. Like, I really would hate that. Like, I'm nowhere near a celebrity or anything like that. But let's say me and the wife fall out. God damn it, I don't want anybody talking about this. Like, I don't want anybody talking about it. So, but I mean, that's kind of like the things you sign up for when you're a celebrity. But I think there's so much to get into besides celebrity gossip and things that make the algorithm turn in that way. I'm fine. I don't ever have to pay attention to that.
Yeah, that, and then also I think even now, like, you know, what's really consumed, at least on the outside in, man, is, you know, all these multiple conversations. And I think you actually would provide a perspective on this. Is that, you know, we see a lot of conversations today on relationships and like what it means to actually have a positive and healthy relationship. And I think within our culture, and this is going to be my hot take for today, I think our culture worries too much on how to present something in a way that was never meant for us in the first place. Now, let me take a second to expand real quick.
Yeah. Honestly.
So the biggest thing, and I don't mean this with disrespect, I understand where it comes from, is, you know, this whole idea of like, what does somebody bring to the table, and like 50-50 and things like that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of folks are failing to realize that it is more than just a financial thing.
Yeah.
Of one that's being presented. So I think when we have these people do these hot takes on what somebody should and should not do, biggest thing we really don't talk about though, for real, man, is like a lot of this stuff is from a Eurocentric perspective. Hate to call it how it is, man, but it is, you know, like a lot of it, and it doesn't mean it's wrong. Like, I don't think there's nothing wrong of a man taking care of a wife, paying everything. There's no issue with that.
Yeah.
I think the thing is within our culture specifically that makes it more of an issue is that we are hurting people that are trying to probably do those things, and they may not be there at that point in time. Like, I don't think people really understand on both sides how hard it is to be a black man, but also how hard it is to be a black woman. So when you have two broken sides, you got two broken sides coming together, and the views aren't the same, it's not going to help.
You know what I'm trying to say? Yeah, no, I totally agree. The biggest thing I hate about gender war conversations, no one chooses to hear the other side, right? It's always you take it as a complaint and then you move on. Yeah. And it seems like the people that are the loudest on social media about these things probably either already have a mate or like super single. But it's like, it's really like no in between.
Yep.
If that makes sense. It's always two extremes. And yep. I honestly hate the conversation. Like, me and my wife have these debates all the time, right? And I could be on the side of the man or the side of the woman if I just see that that's what it is.
Yeah.
And it's not that hard. Like, you know what I'm saying? I think people just really lost the art of communication, and nobody wants to really be in love anymore. If your marriage or your relationship is going to be a business, is it going to be transactional in that way? Let it be that. But don't confuse it with the love, because love and love and business, they just don't mix, bro. Like,
never,
they don't.
Never will.
They never will. So if you're looking for a business partner and someone to just be on your arm, go do that. But if you're looking for love, love is not. Listen, I'm not telling you to be no fool. Like, you know what I'm saying? Don't pick nobody up off the street. Like, you know, I do believe in dating someone that's in your space and on your level. Like, you have to connect. But just don't go get anybody.
Yeah, and I think, because remind me, how long have you been married? I know you've been married.
I've been married 3 years. 3 years.
3 years. And how long were y'all together?
We were together 5 before we got married.
Okay, so I got to ask, because I'm going to try to get a clickbait out of this now. So I'm gonna ask anyway. How long did it take you to propose to your wife?
Well, it took... The thing is, well, honestly, I knew, right? And this is where we can talk about how my feelings were and how, you know, traumatic it was, right?
Right.
I felt like I wasn't ready because I was running a blind race comparing myself to other men around me, my friends, right?
Right.
They had everything together. And I just wanted to get that before I said, hey, let's do this. But not knowing that you got to struggle before you get to wherever you're going to get to, you got to struggle to get that. So the moment we said, you know, I was like, hey, you know what, let's get married. Like, you know, not like that, you know,
I know.
Proposal, you know, not a nice proposal, right? I didn't hit it with like, hey, you know,
what you mean,
like what we doing, like we gonna do it? No, it wasn't that. But just kind of it was like something I had to get past, because I didn't give her enough credit to believe that she would be there with me to kind of figure this shit out. And that's where, you know, I think a lot of my hangups were, you know. But My wife is my best friend, and I don't mean that as like the most cliche thing to say. No, I literally mean that. She's my nigga. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the homie. So yeah. Nobody makes me laugh more than her. So it's just really that. It's just you have to get out your own way, and that was what I had to learn. You know what I'm saying? I had to learn that.
No, I think that's I think you kind of nailed it on the head, man. I think what a lot of people don't recognize is, and I think this is a lesson that I've learned a long time ago, is that you do meet people where they're at. Yeah, as much as I used to say, oh, that's an excuse, I mean, it's the truth though, man. Like, you really do meet people where they're at. I do think in our case as men, our ego can get in the way of a good thing, or we feel like we have to be in a place of stability. And I think a lot of people don't recognize that what keep most men up at night is not necessarily the fear of commitment. It's, can I actually financially be able to be their provider? I think that often gets overlooked. Now, yes, there's a large mass of men out here who do not necessarily want to be providers. And when people make those grievances, I 100% agree on their frustration, especially with Black women who I think really do. They wait around for a while. Gotta give credit when it's due. They do be waiting around for a while now, so I can understand why people could be tired. I just think that, again, sometimes when you meet somebody where they're at, you aren't really getting the full picture of somebody. And sometimes men usually find themselves when they are in the most struggling situation. Can't be mad at that. But you also can't, you know, I also understand the other end too. It's like, you know, you may not want to be with somebody that's struggling, but I guarantee you that at some point that man will fall and crumble. I don't care how much money he got, because life happens. You got life traumatic experiences where I don't care how much money you got, you lose somebody you care about. No money matter at all. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So that's why I don't think that, I think that's the hard part. And that's why I'm hoping for like a restoration, not just for just Black relationships, just relationships in general, where we have to get out of the financial psyche of determining the success of a relationship. Because I always say it's easy to get there. It's hard to keep it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we just have to do a lot of unwiring of the way we think. Right. A lot of this comes from just what we deem to be social norms. Right. The man's provider. Man is this. Man is this. Women do this. Like, okay, well, in most situations, if you got a real mate, listen, those things really don't work like that. Like, it's some days where I might cook dinner. Like, it's, you know, it's like, what are we talking about? Like, what is specific to gender norms, right? And you just have to really read your mate or whoever you're with, because like, really, all that shit doesn't matter if you're really trying to make it work with somebody. Because things are going to be changing, things are going to be up, things are going to be down. That's why I said, if you're going to have a business partner, do that. But if you're going to be in love, it's really compromise.
That's the hard part, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So what's the key to compromising? With somebody, when two people come together, man, look, I know me, so I can be stubborn. Man. So.
Listen, one thing marriage has taught me, and it makes me feel like I'm such an OG when I'm not. Like, I'm still new to the marriage game. But it's just like, it's an everyday thing. It's literally every day. I wake up every day to choose love. And I choose to be here. And I choose to be present in my marriage. And the compromise is thinking about what benefits us before what benefits me.
That's a bar.
It's such a struggle, bro. Because you've been this individual for so long, even if y'all been dating, you can still pick your up and go. She's the beneficiary on my life insurance. Like, things get different when paperwork is involved. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. But it's the compromise is just figuring out that person. And that person always evolves and changes, as do you. So what are you willing to compromise on for them, and what are they willing to compromise for you for the sake of the relationship? Because there's always going to be some give and take. Some days I'm giving 70 and it's 30, and you know it's never 50-50.
Thank you for saying that.
Get that out of your head.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you. I've always said that. I hate when people, and I don't want to use hate because I do. I really hate when people think every day is going to be the same exact day. Every day is not sunshine and flowers. And everybody loves each other. Because to me, that's not realistic. And I'm not saying like there's nothing wrong with wanting a happy, healthy relationship. Like, I think that is great. I think if you predicate your success of your relationship strictly based off your happiness, it's going to implode. That's just my opinion, because there's so many factors outside of the relationship alone that will make your relationship with that person miserable. If you hate your job and you hate everything else around you, this person isn't going to necessarily make it better, nor should you expect them to make it better. Like, the part, like, I, at least in my opinion, you can tell me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't think you expect your wife alone mm-hmm. to make you happy for everything in your life.
Absolutely not. Like, do I see her as a, like, a percentage of the source of my happiness? Absolutely. Sure. Yes. But no, not, I don't depend on her for that. Like, I can find my solace in a lot, you know? And that's what people fail to realize. I have identity. I have things that's outside of my marriage that can provide me the things that I need and the tools that I need, because you have to have that. Everything, you can't, one person can't provide you one thing. Like, and I'm sorry to say that. And I'm not saying, like, you know, I seek things outside of my marriage. That's not what I'm saying. Like, there are things and people that relationships and bonds that I can get that build me up as a person, as a man, that my wife can't provide for me.
Right. I think that's the thing. So what's the biggest lesson you learned just as a married man, that, you know, I guess more about yourself? Like, what's the biggest thing you learned about yourself that maybe you had to, like, work on, or did you feel like you had to improve on, or just anything? Like, what's the biggest lesson you think you've learned so far?
I think I had to learn how to communicate better, right? Now, I have siblings, and they were always on my father's side, but I was raised as the only child on my mom's, right?
Like me.
So yeah. When it came to, like, the art of communication with certain things, I didn't have that. So when you get into a relationship with somebody that you have to live with, and you have to constantly say things, like, you have to constantly do things, it's just like, oh my God. But that's one thing I'd learned. I think the communication was something that I'm learning. I'm even learning still. Like, I haven't mastered it at all. Yeah. But when it comes to the art of communication with somebody that I'm dealing with every day, and it's like, you know, because me and my brother, you know, God rest his soul, like, we had a great relationship. But, you know, I didn't see him as much as I would, you know, would like to, because we didn't live in the same house.
Right.
So that was a different dynamic. So I think communication, honestly, bro, is just something that I struggled with, like, coming into it. I currently struggle with, but it's not as bad. But, you know, and I think a lot of things, therapy and everything, just kind of helped me kind of shake out of it.
So when you say communication, are you just talking about, like, your actual needs, like, feelings?
Yeah, communicating actual needs and feelings. And that's, like, one thing I didn't even know I struggled with.
Ain't the only one.
and when I don't get my way, this is where the only child kicks in. So I didn't know. Like, you don't know until you don't, like, until something happens, right?
Yeah.
And you have to go through a lot of, like, I use the word unwiring, just try to unfigure, you know, just try to untie those knots and try to figure it out again. And then, you know, I come to you as a 36-year-old man. So it's like, I'm trying to change how I view things and communicate things. It's been successful for me up until said point. So I'm like, well.
No, that's I mean, I feel like that's every man's struggle, is the ability to express. And I think I'm somebody that at least have tried to take pride in being more open. But I definitely fall short. A lot of that is ego, honestly. Ego and pride, man. I think the downfall of every man. I think, at least for us, and I think most men can relate, but I know for Black men in particular, the idea of looking weak has always been, it's always been like an innate fear of mine. So when people always say, you know, why don't you express yourself more? It's like, well, it's not that I don't think a man doesn't want to express himself. I think Again, I think that the biggest fear is that the expression gets used against them.
The worst thing you can do is tell somebody your innermost thoughts and then it's weaponized against you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the worst thing, right? I come to you in confidence about whatever it is, right? And it's weaponized against you in jokes or whatever the case may be. So it's like you're trying to like express yourself and let your expressions be known. But if it's going to be used against you, you know what? I'm all right.
No, so that's definitely it. So if you don't mind, let's transition to something. I know that, you know, one of the reasons why I want to reach out, and obviously feel free to share whatever.
Yeah.
And just like the other side of things too, like when we are as Black men, we as people, I won't even, I'm just not even making up us as people. When we deal with those hard times, man, how have you best like navigate through that? Cause it looks different for everybody. But I think with us in particular, I'm going back to us, how we deal with trauma looks a lot different, I think, than other people. I think it's often feel like it's suppressed.
Yeah. I don't know. It depends on your upbringing. It depends on like how you view spirituality. Like it depends on how you view your mental health care, right? What does that look like for you? Somebody that grew up as a church kid, right? I'm churched out. I don't particularly like go to a church religiously every Sunday anymore. And that's because and you know, this is a conversation I think me and you had. I was just like, well, listen, ever since my mama died, it's just kind of rough for me to go to church. That's just where I'm at with it. So I still have a healthy prayer life. I'm still, you know, I might tune into like, you know, a little YouTube something, you know, to give me something to, you know, motivate me to keep me going. But going to church every Sunday, that's out. That's, you know, and that's just my feeling on it. And but you have to stay connected to a higher power. I'm not sitting here trying to convert people to Christianity or whatever. Believe in what you want to believe in, but believe in something. That's all I kick to anybody. And mental health, oh my God. Like if I wasn't in therapy before, I've had a lot of traumatic experiences so I had therapy leading up to a lot of the things that I went through. So if I didn't have that framework around me, I don't know how I would, you know, be able to function just with the spiritual, you know, the spiritual sense, mental health, and then even like you allude to me going to work out. Hey, listen, bro, I got to do something. Like, and the more I live, the more I become an adult, like, because I'm a full grown adult, which is something that blows me every day I think about it. I understand why people have addictions and people kind of go to like substances and things of that nature. And that's not anything that I'm promoting or kicking to anyone, but I can understand how traumatic experiences lead you down a dark path. And I was like, I'm thankful to, you know, the God that I pray to and the things that I'm, you know, my mental, you know, fortitude that I haven't went down that path. Yeah. Because it could have been, me and you couldn't even be having this conversation if I wasn't, you know, good.
No, man, I'm telling you, bro, I'll never forget. Like I said, the last time I saw you, I don't remember the timeline, but I do feel like you had a series of traumatic events, like relatively close to each other. And I just remember, I don't know if it was the tequila at that point, but it was the most open and honest conversation I think I've had with anybody during that time. But at that moment, though, I really recognize your strength as a person, man. Because I think, you know, from somebody outside in, I haven't lost those close people yet. Does it consume my mind all the time? Absolutely. Because I'm very much driven in realism of thinking.
Yeah.
So it's like, I know at some point, you know, the same stories are, I'm going to share it too. I just think that how, at least on the outside in, on the way how you've handled it, I definitely want to commend you for it. Because you're right, man, this addictions.
Mm-hmm.
Addictions go down strong. Like, it's tough, man. Like, it's very easy to get addicted because it takes away the pain. Like,
Pains.
most people don't want to sit with their problems, man. Like, and I don't even judge nobody for that no more. But no
It's
people want
like
to.
if I see somebody kind of strung out, I'm like, oh, like
Now I
not to
get what
make
you're saying,
light,
though.
yeah, not to make light of it, but
Yeah.
listen, man, I there's so much like we talked about, like we had our drunken moment in therapy session, but those words were needed, and you didn't understand how much, what that did for me. So I appreciate you for that. But it's rough. And for, listeners, I don't even mind telling this. Like, I lost my father, my little brother, and my mother all within 9 months of each other.
That was what, yep.
So that's pretty much what happened, right? I got married. 3 weeks later, my father passes of liver disease. 9 months later, my mom contracts, COVID or whatever, and my brother died of a car wreck while I was like waiting for my mother, like seeing if she would survive like the breathing treatments. So 12 days before my mom passed, my brother died in a car wreck. Like a drunk driver hit him. He was on the side of the road on Highway 70 in St. Louis. So I, so having to deal with three funerals in 9 months for people that I'm really, really close to, and being front row and having to deal with funeral arrangements and things like that, and dealing with the death, like the business of death, that's something that like
Nobody talks about.
nobody talks about that. So I just employ people that kind of have like business in order, because when people are gone, they're gone, and but their bills and their paperwork and things like that still stay. And those are things that we're left to kind of deal with and handle.
No, trust me. I mean, these are things that you obviously don't want to think about. And so, but yeah, I said, man, I remember, like I said, I remember when we talked. I do remember the story with mom. I remember you shared several things back to back, and I just sat there. I'm like, dang, man, like this man is still, he's trying. I'm like, he's still trying to like just live his life and try to act like there's a bit of normalcy in it. And I truly think that we lose a lot of sight of that side because a lot of us are so caught into what we're meant to do today. And I think that's one of the hardest things that I've learned, just doing content itself. Like you kind of mentioned in the beginning, like being authentic. Like what do I want people to get out of this? Like, am I doing this really for myself? Or am I doing this so other people can actually get a sense of hope and inspiration? Because I'm sure on your end, man, there's been many times you probably shot content. Your mind not even there. You're not thinking about nothing else but what you got going on in life, but you know that other people, they may need something, man. And that again, it goes back to a theory that life is all about service, man. I mean, that's like your wife is your best friend, but at the end of the day, y'all are serving each other through the highs and through the lows. We just don't talk about the lows enough. And I really want us to start doing that more as people. That's why I applaud you for even sharing that part. You know what I mean? Because it's just like, it's tough, man. I know it's tough. I don't even try to act like it. Like, oh no, that's some real shit, man. Like, that's real.
Whatever you see on social media, hey man, I don't think I put too much out there, and I don't
No.
think that what I have out there is like this big veil over the real, the real me. But my life is virtually open book. Like whatever you see, that's pretty much what it is. Like it's no glitz or glamour to it. Like what I'm saying, I travel a little bit. Like what I'm saying, like I don't do a lot. What I'm saying, not for the sake of content or social media, but it's just, man, live your life, man, and just try to be the best you, the most authentic you, because you can live your life trying to be something for somebody else, and you miss out on so much else, so much more.
Man, with us as adults, as you like unlearn a lot of it is parental. A lot of it comes from something that happened in your childhood and something with parents. And so you try to find it when you're an adult with partners. And there's a truth that I personally don't think that a partner could actually fix that problem
No,
alone. They don't.
and it's not on them too. Like, you don't
No.
know how you need to be loved. You don't know that. You think you do, but you have to figure that out. You have to figure out, I hate love languages, but it's a real thing.
I'm about to go there.
I hate it. Like you said, like I hate to use the word hate. Yes. I don't really like the notion of it because, hell, if you ask me, I like all of them should apply to me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yep. All of them should be applicable. But, you know, there are certain ones that, you know, probably mean more to others.
100%.
But all that stuff should work.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to get to. It's not, I don't have an issue with love language in the sense of like what somebody may need. Mm-hmm. I think what people, I think, can forget is, again, you're meeting somebody, whether at how they were raised. Mm-hmm. So let's say you came from a big, heavy physical touch family.
Yeah.
Your partner did not. Your partner may never, never, ever change the ability to want to be more affectionate because that's not how they were raised. Now, they could try to meet you in the middle. But at the end of the day, they may never, ever change that because of how they were raised. Mm-hmm. If you come from a family that was always very argumentative, you're probably going to have a more argumentative partner because that's what they're used to. A lot of us are used in chaos in different ways. God. Myself included. I mean, I think for the most part, I've seen a lot of healthiness, but I also think that one of my bigger flaws when it does come to seeing somebody, dating somebody, is that for me, I can get defensive.
Yeah.
I can get defensive when there are certain critiques made about me because I used to struggle growing up trying to please everybody or feeling like that I was good enough. And so when you would critique something about me, I naturally get defensive. Mm. That's something I'm still working on. It's gotten better, but I'm just saying though, like, but I've been in therapy for about 3 years. So I, one of the things, that's the biggest thing I learned about me as a kid, a lot of my life, because I grew up like you as well. That's pretty much like I was an only child, but also my situation, I was kind of like the golden child. Everybody kind of put me on this weird pedestal. I never got in trouble for real. My mom didn't play. I went to certain, you know, went to high school, went to CBC, things like that. Like, people put me on a pedestal.
Yeah.
So I learned. But I always felt like it was never enough, though, because I would always hear, like, a however, a but. And so, you know, when I started to write, like, I mean, I write, a lot of that was driven in the fact that I have to do something that's so out the box to be recognized as a person. Bro. That's where a lot of it stemmed from. Like, I'm like, why do I do so much? And that's what I realized. Like, I'm trying to do so much so people can just see that, you know, I'm here.
Rashad, man, you're giving me like body shots right now because I feel like we're talking the same thing. We live the same life.
Yeah.
When it comes to like not the overachiever, but it's like you're not vying for attention. You're just trying to see if people see your value.
And that's always my problem.
And that's the problem that I struggle with too.
Yep.
So if you're in romantic relationships of friendships, relationships with your family, you always try to make sure that they see you, but you don't rock the boat necessarily because you don't want to like sever the relationship. You don't want it to change. You just want them to see you and value you. So a lot of
I'm just saying, like,
yeah, that's exactly what I've struggled with before.
Like, even overextending yourself. Like,
that part too. Like, feeling like you have to kind of fix things when that's not even your place. You don't have to do that. Sometimes people just want to know if you have the bandwidth to handle the things that they're talking about. You don't have to actually be hands-on with the situation at all. But that's just how you're hardwired. That's you as a person being genuine. You know what I'm saying? And that's where you probably have a lot of people that just flock to you and don't even know why. You don't even know why, right?
Oh, no, it happens all the time.
Yeah, like you just have people telling you your life story and everything. Like, all the time, man. That's crazy. But, you know, I'm glad you shared that with me. Like, that's usually, I have that happen to me all the time, but it's just something about your spirit that draws people in.
I think that's, but also the biggest lesson I learned with that too is like, even like from a romantic sense of, you know, your partner can't fix everything.
No.
And I think sometimes the partner has to recognize you can't fix everything. Oh, no. Some things are so out of everybody's jurisdiction. There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing you can do. It doesn't make you a bad partner. It doesn't mean you are incapable of being loving to that person. Some people are just going through enough real life situations mm-hmm. where there's nothing nobody can do. I went through a situation like that. There was nothing nobody can do.
Yeah.
Hey, all you do is look. I'm telling you, because I was very transparent in that state. Nothing nobody can do. Absolutely. I ain't going to complain about it either. Like, yeah, there's moments, but I'm not going to sit there mm-hmm. and make you feel like you can change it, you know? And I think I had to work on the best was like saying you've never been in my shoes. Of course not, right? It's even if it's a very similar situation, it's going to be about perspective. So I had to learn to stop saying that. But I think the biggest thing was just like, recognize like whoever it is, friends, family, parents, like that's only so much they can do. Fact. Some storms you were just meant to be in by yourself.
Absolutely.
And absolutely. It sucks when you in it by yourself, but at the end of the day though, my dad told me that a long time ago. One of the biggest lessons he told me as a kid, man, is that everybody gets a chance at that front row. And what he was referring to was obviously referring to like losing a parent, right? Mm-hmm. Or a funeral or whatever. But he also was applying that to life. Like at some point, man, you get your turn and you in that front row and it's just hitting you left and right. And you have to deal with it. Ain't nothing you can do. But it happens. But he told me, he said, it don't happen once. It happens several times. It's
just,
each time you just learn a little bit different to deal with it. You actually, you know what? This is off topic. You may know him. He's a Q as well, man. My dad's name is Stan. You go by TC.
TC. I probably know his face if I don't know.
Frank, very confident. You know who my father. Everybody know who my dad is.
Say less.
Trust me. Everybody know who my dad is. All you gotta say is TC, and I guarantee you. Somebody know. I used to hate that growing up as a kid. Go somewhere. I'd be like, dog. I put that out there, man. I'm gonna clip that for him so he can feel good, so I can attack him. No, everybody knows him. But no, yeah, man. I just think, we all have something we deal with. I just think the biggest thing is that I've just learned to just kind of face things now, man. Just face it head on, man. This is who I am. This is what I bring with. And I think if people actually did that more. Mm-hmm. When they are connecting with people, mm-hmm. I actually think that people would find more success in connecting with people. I think a lot of us put facades up for so long. I always say, I'm going to see the real side anyway, at some point. You know what I mean? All right, you just say what you got dealing with. You ain't got to tell me your deepest, darkest secrets, but like, you know what I mean? It'll make it easier though. I do think.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the longer you deal with somebody or see things, like you'll start to see the real them. And the truth always rises to the top, no matter what, no matter what. So we'll get to it if we don't get to it now, we'll get to it a few days, few weeks, few months, a year. Like it always comes out. So
yeah, I think that's the best time when you really learn somebody's actually there for you or not. Like as far as like a partner,
absolutely.
Well, not even a partner, just friendship, whatever. Like it don't really matter. It's just like when you're going through some real stuff.
Yeah,
and somebody's it's a difference. Like you cannot do anything; it's one thing. But if somebody's willing to make an attempt to be there, that's how you know somebody's intentions. You got to give credit to people like that because usually when people get any side of discomfort, they usually run.
Yeah,
I think that's the bigger issue in our time today is that we run at the first sight of discomfort. Because one of the last thing I'll say about theories. I hate when people use the grass is always greener somewhere else. I think that's like the biggest piece of trash that could be said because it's not the truth though. Like somebody's like, oh, I just go find better. Well, you still gotta have it. It still gotta be watered though. Like the same.
Okay. I get where you're going now. Like, you know what I mean? I get where you're going.
Go ahead.
No, I don't want to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying like when things go love with somebody, right. And depending on where they are in life, people like, you know, well, I think when you're with somebody, sometimes like there could be a drop off, like maybe you're not as attentive or whatever. Like, it could be a sense of comfort, and you know, because you've been with somebody for a while.
Yeah.
At some point, I think people get in people's ears and like, oh, it could be better elsewhere. And sometimes it can be like if you truly are being mistreated, there is somebody probably better for you, potentially. Yep. The same thing that I will always say as rebuttal, though, that person still will do the same thing that person did at some points because there is a level of drop off that happens because life can happen to that person as well. So some person could be overly romantic at first. They give you everything they want. They buy you everything. Yeah. And as soon as they got you, they can stop.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm more so saying when people are like, oh, you know, the grass is always greener elsewhere. It's like, it can be, but still got to water it, man. Like, it still requires the same level of attention and care. And the problems in that situation go different than the other one.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of like leaning into your point. Like, if it's not being watered, then what are you doing? It's like the work from within has to, you know, has to exude. Because, like, I think of people that leave their hometown, and I'm, you know, this is not me talking with you, but just like, you know, how someone may say, hey, I'm going to Houston, I'm going to Atlanta.
Hey, don't like, do that.
No, we doing it. But no. Like the work has to be there. Like, yeah, like, you can move for a job and things like that, but if you're just saying I'm moving to Houston and you're not working on yourself, like, this is not, I can't say this with Rashad because Rashad is working on himself. So that's not applicable, right? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, but to the people that just say, hey, I'm leaving, okay.
Oh, I hate that.
So you're gonna do the same thing here, you know, there that you're doing here. Like, I just, you know, I hate to hear that, you know, because if you're gonna move, be different. You know what I'm saying? Not necessarily reinvent yourself, but find the better things about yourself. And then if you have to come back, you're better here because you're better in your, like, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like college, right? Like, if you go away for 4 years of school, invest in your damn self. So when you come back or wherever you move to, you are a better version. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. I think that's when I did move here, that was the one thing I didn't think I was going to do. Cause I very much, like, even in my job, like, people call me St. Louis. I talk about home all the time. Like, yeah. I never want to be that person. And I hate seeing it. It annoys me so much.
Yeah.
Where it's like, well, you know, I moved away from home and home was never nothing to do at home. And like, my rebuttal always to those situations is that, what did you do at home? What did you do at home that you're doing differently here? Because all a new city adds is new. Like, Chicago is much bigger than St. Louis. So yes, naturally there's gonna be more things to do. But I guarantee you, at some point, it's going to feel the same because that newness is going to wear off. If you're doing the same thing here, it's not going to matter. Yes, we can go into the experience being in St. Louis, and, you know, especially being Black in St. Louis. Sure, there's an experience with that. Mm-hmm. There's a circle that we like to talk about. It's silos, whatever.
Yeah,
but you also think about it, that's a small population. When I hear people talk about St. Louis, they love it. I'd be like, dang, I ain't had this experience. It's different. I ain't never heard nobody talk about it like this. No, but I understand, like, why people leave. And like I told you, like, I left to try something different, to say that I tried. But never once did I say I would never come back. I just, like, I've told my mom, has told me, it's a big world out here, man. Like, I always say, if the money was always right and I can live where I want to live, I'll come back home. I already know where I will live at. Yeah. Makes the perfect sense. But until then, until there's an opportunity, then yeah, continue to expand and explore. But home is home, man. That is stupid. I think that's the stupidest thing to say. The people that we inspire to be like, all ironically, they all got a house back where they from.
Right. Exactly.
That ain't made no sense to me. I'm like, your favorite artist got a home back at home.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Because there's a familiarity, there's a comfort, there's a safety. It's like, regardless, yeah, St. Louis got his own issues. It's hot. We know.
Yeah.
Got to drive a little different. I understand. Absolutely. But it's still home. It's what we know. There's a familiarity. And yeah, like you say, you leave and you come back, you learn something, you better, you know how to do. But if you're doing the same things here that you're going to do in Houston,
the cost of living is higher there. So what you go?
Hey, man, you know, people go to Houston for brunch, man. That's it. They go to brunch. People go to Houston just to go to brunch, man. No disrespect. Brunch is great. But like, I just think that, I think people just have to expand their minds on why they're trying to move. You're actually trying to move and grow and better yourself, then go for it. But if you're just doing it to have fun, Yeah, being people. Gonna miss, like, and maybe I had to learn that because I have very much have taken my life. I've learned, like, I can take it too serious sometimes. Cause I think it's like anybody else, like, you're just a destination you're trying to reach. But also, I think on the other end too, is like, you kind of got to take it serious, man, if you're really trying to get to where you want to go to. Cause like all this, all the fun stuff that people do, like, it's relatively temporary, man. Like, at some point, you got to get tired of going out every week. You got to.
Exactly.
Got to. Like, at some point,
You would think, right? But people don't have, like, some people, you know, I'm not going to speak on anybody, but it's just like, I think my warped sense of reality, and I'm not going to speak for anybody else but Ralph, it's just that with social media, you think that that's all they do, and they might be able to balance the scale with both. I doubt it, but I think I give people a little bit more credit than they actually have.
but
it's just, you know, you have to be focused, and I think when you're actually focused, like, those things don't matter. The nightlife doesn't matter. So if you ask me, if I move to Houston or Dallas or these, you know, DC or these hot spots where a lot of Black people are, I can be focused because I go out here in nauseam. So like, a new brunch in a new city is not going to do that much for me. Like, yeah, oh, it's new Black people I haven't seen before, but that's it. Like, I get chicken and waffles anywhere, my nigga. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not. Like, most brunch food is like pretty much standard across the board. Like,
brunch staple, chicken and waffles.
Chicken and waffles. Like, what are we doing here? All
right. Chicken and waffles, boneless mimosas. Like, right, I mean, cool. Again, I try to, you know, who I am, I don't want people to, you know, if you like going out, I'm not that person. I would never judge somebody based off what they do to have fun, because life is short, and if you should have it, so never that. I think the thing is, though, it's like, okay, at some point, we are going to face ourselves with a reality of, we're going to ask ourselves, what are we doing with ourselves? And I think that's the biggest thing I kind of at least try to do with my content, is just try to paint a picture of my own self-reflection. Because this is the things I think about all the time, man. 98% of my thoughts, I'm asking myself, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
That's most of the things that keep me up at night, man. It ain't got nothing to do with money. Yeah, money matters, but it's like, am I doing what I am meant to do?
Mm-hmm.
And not only like in my view of how God has designed us as people, but am I doing what I am designed to do as a person to actually create maximum fulfillment? You know, that's really it. But yeah, it's having fun is fine, but I think why a lot of us struggle mentally is because a lot of us are running around with our heads cut off, not knowing what we really want to do, or struggling or not feeling like we're being fulfilled because we're doing these lackluster jobs or whatever that we know we don't want to do, and then we hide it by going out, etc., which again is nothing wrong with that. But when you spend your time every week focusing on the weekend, I think that's the biggest thing I've learned. It's like, we need to have a conversation, and not in a judgmental way, because I get it. Like, a lot of us are doing that because we're trying to escape that. We hate what we do every day, but something has to change. There has to be some sort of internal inner work to be like, all right, why do I really not like what I do? What is it? Why is it? You know, and that's so many of us across the world, bro. And like I said, at least I think what you know, like, I'm in school right now to be a therapist, man. Like, I pay attention to this stuff all the time. Like, bro, like, our world, most of us are depressed as shit every day. Not even about like life happening, just simply existing. Because every time we get on our phone, we scroll and we have these highlight reels. Yeah. And obviously, as creators, we know it, because not only are we posting the content, it's simple. We post the content. All right, we're going to check our phone, see how many numbers we did.
Right, right.
We got, right. And then depending on where you are, messes with your head. Oh, that wasn't a good one. You spent maybe 4 hours editing that clip. Yes. Thinking, oh, that's the one. Mm-hmm. Like, I've even learned, like, I don't even do that no more, man. Look, I edit, I put it out. I maybe check one or two times, and I don't check it for a couple hours. I learned I was going to be in a cycle. Yeah. It's like, why am I chasing the likes and the views? Like, yeah, you, like, let's be real. Like, you make content. I don't care. Nobody say, if you're a content creator and you say you don't do this, you lying to yourself. Make content to be recognized.
Absolutely.
We we can't lie to ourselves here. We don't want to be recognized for saying something, doing something. That's why content's made. I think once you remove that thought, though, you're making content to do something bigger than yourself. And whatever comes from that, man. Like, I think Keith Lee is a prime example. My opinion. I think he did something naturally just to deal with something, but it became bigger than life.
Absolutely.
Now, like, they're doing food reviews, man. Eating food.
Traveling. Like,
traveling food. But think about, like, the goodness he is doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, because of that, I wonder if he had that same thought sometimes. Like, it's not even about being recognized. Let's make it bigger than that. Let's try to give these people who are struggling to maintain their business something. Now you bless them. Like, that's how it should be.
Absolutely. But
a lot of our content now, man, centered around, I'm going to sound so judgmental. But I don't mean it. I think Get Ready With Me's are great. I do. I can't do the Target one, bro.
I can't do the Target one, bro.
Now I'm not gonna hate on bro.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Obviously it worked. I think it was a brand deal. And I actually think it's brilliant to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Because I think people forget, like, as a content creator, you are creating content. That is their job.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think what has happened is that we have normalized the basic things that we do every now. Normalize, we over glamorize the basic things. Like, yeah, a simple Target run now is becoming aesthetic. Like, you gotta play some music in the background, you dance and get dressed. Like, I got past the cringe and I, like, looked at it from a business lens. But, like, you got somebody at home right now checking it, like, man, I don't even go to Target like that. You get what I'm saying? No, like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, people will be looking at a basic run of a everyday activity that they do, it's not good enough, because everybody not wishing that their life was like that too.
Everyday vlogs kind of bother me. Like, I didn't realize that that was really a thing, and I didn't know that until my wife watches, like, a million women that do it all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now I can get, like, a travel one, you know, travelers. Like, I get that. But I'm talking about, like, every day I go to, like you said, I go to Target, I come back home and cook for my husband. I check on my daughter. Like, you know, it's like we're going on a date night. It's really like an everyday. I was like, people watch this every day.
It works.
Like, and I'm talking about views. Like, this young lady, like, and it's not hating. I'm just like, like, I'm enamored by it.
I am,
like,
too.
People that live their everyday life on YouTube and have literally retired, like, left jobs because I'm getting paid so much for these people to view me. Shout out. Like,
no, it's a real skill. Like, I don't hate on it at all. I'm just like, have people, it's more so like from a mental aspect. Like, you're sad because somebody went to Target, bro. there's nobody stopping you from doing that. It's just, do you want to look ridiculous in somebody else's eyes? I don't care what nobody say. Drew, I'm gonna clip this too. Drew, I appreciate you. Show me the way. Teach me the sauce. Could obviously work. Now, would I do that? I don't know. But for you to do that, to put a tripod out, do all that, man, and to get people clowning you, and you still getting paid. Kudos to you, man.
Listen, man, I love my privacy too much. Like, you know what I'm saying? I love to put out what I love to put out, but
right.
When you give people, imagine if you did this and you didn't get the views. Imagine doing all this. Like, imagine, you know, you putting your life, your daily life out there, and you weren't getting the views, the recognition, the money, or whatever. I mean, of course, the grind has to come from somewhere, but still.
It wouldn't be the same.
You know,
if likes and views didn't exist, it wouldn't be the same.
No.
I don't care what nobody says. People be like, I post for me. No, you don't.
It is
for you, yes, but it is also a documentation unconsciously to me for other people to see. I don't think there's nothing wrong that people who do fitness things, I love it. You posting your gym progression every day, I love it. But at the end of the day,
that's for somebody. Like, listen,
it's for somebody at some point
to see, right? And I'm shout out to people that are, for one, inspired by what I do, which is crazy. Like, I don't think about it in that way,
yeah.
But I definitely post because like I'm making progression and I want people to see the progression. Like let's not get it twisted. Like, yeah, I do post for me, but it's for people to see that I'm actually doing the work. So when I pop out and you see me a little slimmer, you know, I didn't go get the surgery. It's cool, you know, if you do that, but I did do it. You know what I'm saying? I didn't do that. Now I'm not knocking nobody away to do that, because sometimes you just dispose to it. You can't get it off of you, but you know, it's working for me right now.
I just want us to be honest with ourselves moving to this year, man. I think content creation is beautiful. I just, for those who are just in that space of like when they feel like their life is lost because they're drowning themselves in content, absolutely, I wish people would just take a step back and really, really think about how this is some weird illusion. Somebody recorded a bunch of rough edits, mm-hmm, that they edit great for your eyes. You gotta think about how many takes that person may have did. Like, you're getting a highlight reel of somebody's day. It doesn't mean anything else, nothing more, nothing less. It doesn't mean your life is less valuable. Like, it's right. Like I said, you know, these are great, and like I think it is life changing. And that obviously this is why I think we still do it for as long as we do. Exactly. With the hopes that maybe one video will change our life. All it takes is one, really. All it takes is one, and then that's great. But then like on the other end too, it's like, for those who don't do social media, like, don't feel pressed to do it, because that may not be you, man. This is a very uncomfortable space to be in.
Absolutely.
To open up and to tell people about yourself.
On the day-to-day.
Day-to-day.
The day-to-day. This is what I do every day. Someone can know your routine. Someone can know your husband, a wife, your child's name, where you go to the gym. Like, no, that is a lot. That's all I'm saying, man.
It takes more, man. But listen, I appreciate this convo, man. Seriously, this was I'm glad we was able to, I mean, just catch up and catch up and make content at the same time.
Absolutely.
But I just want to say though, man, I'm proud of you, brother, as always. And I always think these moments are testaments to remind us of what's most important, man. You don't have to talk to somebody all the time to feel like there's a brother. Like, I've always felt like that's you and Johnny, older brothers, but I always felt more connected with you. I feel like I've seen you more in spaces. And every time we talk, man, it's just always been something. Or every time I felt like I've just needed to check on you, man, I just wanted to do it. Because I think we very much go on a day-to-day, like, we see people, but we don't really acknowledge what they do. And it's not about a pat on the back, like, oh, yeah, like, I did this. No, like, I'm seeing somebody, and I want them to feel encouraged, man. Like,
yeah.
Did I think about it? I was like, all right, man, this man told me what he had going on. Dude, let's see how he's doing, man. Time goes on, and it doesn't wait for nobody, but
absolutely, people
still got feelings, man. And as Black men in particular, we don't do this enough. I always take for something to happen for us to be like, oh, let me go check on my dog. Like, nah, man, like, you know, it's what it is. Like, see how you doing, man. I'm glad that things are going well. I know you said that y'all were taking a break. Y'all want me back soon?
When I get through with this, probably in another hour, we're probably gonna record something.
So. Oh, well, see, man, this is great, man. What y'all like on episode 500 now, man? I know y'all was in the
214, somewhere up in there. I don't know, man.
People don't understand, man. It's a grind, man.
Well, it's a grind. You gotta love this, man.
Got to. Hey, I keep leaving and coming back. breaks are necessary. I used to be that person, but we ain't taking no breaks. That's why Nick and them used to hate me so much. I'm like, look, we gotta take a break.
Got to.
Yeah. We've talked about it, man. I want to bring it back, man, but it's just hard because I'm not there.
Yeah.
And so it's just more. Yeah. I think that's the thing. It's like when we came back, I was like, dang, I'm about to move. And I told him. But we've talked about it. It's something that I do enjoy. It's just, you know, like I've always told them, like I tell anybody, man, you can't want to make content with me and not be serious about it though. Like,
that part.
And I'm not saying they weren't, but it's just like, if we going to do it, y'all know me.
We got to be committed.
And I was like, if we going to do it, we going to do it. Y'all not going to like me. But we're gonna do it. I just know how this stuff works, man. You gotta be consistent. So
absolutely.
Brother, I appreciate you. I love you, man.
Love you too, man.
I know we will talk soon. And yeah.